Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and Seton Hall University, class of 1985. My great pleasure to be back with you once again today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you on how you utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. February is a very special time, as it is Black History Month. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a most special guest. His name is Majid Whitney. Majid is the Assistant Vice President of Student Services and Senior Associate Dean of Campus Inclusion and Community right here at Seton Hall University. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Majid.
Hey, great morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
The honor is all ours. Kindly tell the audience and me from what city and states you're speaking from today.
Today, I'm speaking from Montclair, New Jersey, which is where I reside for the past nearly 20 years.
Beautiful Montclair. I grew up in Clifton. I know it well, certainly. Thanks for getting up extra early to be with us today.
My pleasure.
We could speak for hours about your background, about this great role you have, even just all the wonderful things happening at Seton Hall. Sadly, we've only got 30 minutes, so we're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. Please share with us a little bit about yourself and your role as an administrator here at Seton Hall University.
Okay. Well, Majid Whitney, I'm born and raised in Camden, New Jersey. So I'm a South Jersey transplant. I've been here in now Northern New Jersey for about 20 years. I've been at Seton Hall for a little bit more than 14 now. And that's taken up a bulk of my higher ed career, which spans a little bit longer than 20 years across three institutions. And, you know, I'm really invested in doing work that can be impactful in changing the lives of people in general. But I would say those that have not been afforded the same privileges and opportunities as others in particular. I think it's very important to know why we get up every day, why we do what we do. And I really believe that 5 minutes of any of our time could change the scope of somebody's life. And I've chosen to do work that has given me the opportunities to really do just that, to lead with empathy and really help others recognize the opportunities that they have to become better versions of themselves, to change the scope of their existence. I don't believe that any of us are finished products. And I have every day to remind me of these opportunities to do just that.
Oh, that's so incredible. The first 30 years of my career, I was in big pharmaceuticals right next to Montclair at the beautiful Roche facility. And the irony, of course, now the medical school over there from Seton Hall and Hackensack. But what's quite fascinating is I did never realize while I was in big pharma what you just said until I got to higher ed here at St. Francis in Brooklyn. That 5 minutes could really be transformative.
There's
no question about that. And kudos to you at such a young age, you realizing that. And devoting your whole life to wonderful students such as we have here at Seton Hall. Now, I could sense already from just some chats we've had in the pre-interview process, and even just now, you have a big Franciscan heart, certainly, no question about that. What would be a few traits that describe your style as a university administrator?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I'll say this, our division of student services really operates under three governing principles, communication, collaboration, and coordination. And I think they really epitomize how I've operated for the last couple of decades as an administrator. I pride myself on communicating in a way that people feel heard. I believe we've been given two ears and one mouth for a reason. I certainly believe we should listen more than we speak. And I don't think we should just listen to words. I think we should listen for meaning and feeling to really get an understanding of how people are feeling. I think that also leads to leading with empathy. You know, I think when you are taking the time to understand where someone is coming from, not to sympathize, not to agree, but to understand, I think it affords us the space and the grace that we need to understand the unique complexities that we all have in our individual selves. And I think that gives us a leg up in how to communicate effectively. I'm really big on collaborating. I think that what we can do together is going to be greater than what any one of us can do individually. And collaborating, looking for greater outcomes, and really giving people an opportunity to demonstrate what they're capable of, what their unique talents are, and really capitalizing on all of those coming together. But I also think that you have to do it in a very selfless way. You know, it's not about being in charge or being the final decision maker, but really creating better outcomes that can expand our impact to reach a broader audience in more intentional, in more significant ways. And I think the coordinating is something that we all take the lead in at different parts. And I think it's really about using our space, our privilege, our influence in a very altruistic way in stepping up or stepping back based on the situation, but ultimately putting other people before ourselves. I tell people often, you know, as a parent, I have three children, one of them is college age, that it's not about me. You know, it's about what I'm able to do for other people. And I think if more of us adopted that approach, we would all be taken care of by default by others putting us first. So my approach as an administrator is really just that, not leading about me, taking my ego out of it, but helping other people realize their potential to create and inspire incredible change in this world. And modeling the behavior of sometimes listening more than I speak, validating others in that process. And the hope is that they too can realize how great of an influence they can have in this world and how they can really change the scope of other people's lives.
Wow. If everyone had your philosophies and approach, this would be a much better world. There's no doubt about that. Did I hear you say you've been with Cetonia 14 years now?
Yes, I came in August 2007, and in those years, I've served our community in several capacities.
I'd be curious: did you dive right into student services, or were you?
I did. I came in student services. I was in what was then called Freshman Studies, which is now in the Center for Academic Success. You know, I was a freshman mentor. I was a associate director of a summer bridge program. I directed a general studies program. I was able to instruct university life, partner across campus on different initiatives. And I eventually became like assistant dean, and I was the person really in charge of all of our graduate assistants, our curriculum and university life, and really being a campus partner and that liaison for our department to partner with others across the campus community. Then I was the associate dean and director of our EOF programs. And then that transitioned me into my current position as assistant vice president, where those EOF programs are still part of my portfolio. That is such incredible work and really meaningful in terms of impacting people's lives. And to still be able to have my fingerprints on that student experience that for what I believe to be the best 4 years of a student's life, because I think it's where they have an opportunity to find but discover who they are, but also who they aren't, and decide how they want to live the rest of their lives. I do believe, I've read a quote one time that said, we're all born twice. It's the day that we kind of come, you know, into existence on the earth. And it's the day that we realize what we're destined to do, we're destined to be. And if I can have a hand in helping someone realize that they are only limited by their imagination and that there are possibilities that are endless, then I think I've done my job, and I've been able to really be connected to that experience for the last 14 years at Seton Hall.
I have no doubt in my mind that you've literally impacted tens of thousands of students here during those 14 years. Now, you mentioned about some of the things going on in student services, but 14 years ago, and even today, are there some traits about Seton Hall overall that maybe drew you here and keep you coming back so wonderfully every day?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I think for the last 14 years, you know, and I've been asked this question a few different ways and I always come back to the same answer. I believe Seton Hall is very, very student-centered. I think it's really about creating transformational experiences for students to become servant leaders in a global society. I think we can think globally and act locally, but I think we're really looking at having an impact beyond the confines of Seton Hall. But I think that's where a lot of the training comes. I think that's where a lot of the spirit of the work comes. But, you know, I see a place every year through all adversities that is really focused on creating opportunities for students and community members to become agents of change and to be lifelong learners, understanding that we're not finished products, that we have to expose ourselves to difference, to become more whole ourselves, to develop a better understanding, a greater affinity for difference and diversity, of race, class, creed, perspectives, paradigms, et cetera, et cetera. And to be able to do that in a higher educational space, over and over and over again, and have those servant leaders come back to Seton Hall and then give back to the very institution that helped to build them up is quite gratifying. And it's one of those things that I never get tired of.
It's amazing because thank God for Monday now is in our 15th year.
Wow.
And just in particular for the first many years, thank you, we came to the station and I worked with students literally from all over the world. And the Catholic University of New Jersey is such a hospitable, welcoming place. Yes, the Catholicism is very important, but the welcoming of all people, regardless of faith, no faith, color, race, creed, it's just so wonderful, certainly, and a great place to be.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned challenges, and if you don't mind, I've got to ask you this question. I don't really want to, but I feel I have to. Has the pandemic affected student engagement overall at Setonia? And if so, how?
I think the pandemic has affected and impacted everyone. You know, I think there's probably a trauma that we are all living with that many of us have just normalized because we have no other choice but to press forward and still do the important work that we do. I think that students, given where they are developmentally in life, having no training or preparation for this kind of moment, I don't think any of us have. I think those challenges have been exacerbated. I think inequities are amplified in times of crisis. So I think what we've seen in students that have maybe fewer resources, a lack of access to technology, supports outside of the school.
If I hear you correctly, yes, there's been challenges, but there's been successes to come out of this pandemic.
Many successes. And I think challenges are what we need to really develop ourselves. We don't go to the gym to be comfortable. We go to the gym to be uncomfortable. You know, I think if someone has a big goal or dream, I think their effort has to match that. But I think in order to know what that effort is needed to match that goal, that dream, I mean, we have to see it. We have to feel it. We have to struggle with some things. But I do think that when we thrive, it's because we've really persevered in the face of that adversity. You know, we've developed some confidence in our competence because we had to really fight for those opportunities. It's not easy, but I think anything that you're able to make it through, something that you're able to learn from and to be informed by. So when you experience other adversity in the future, you now have a frame of reference. You've done this before. Maybe it looked different, but you have the confidence that you will overcome because you've been tested before and you've been successful. I think that's a learned behavior. I wear this wristband and it's been on my wrist since 2016. And it says, greatness is a choice. Create who you want to be. That's something that I live by every day. It's something that I challenge my children to live by every day. You know, if there's something that you want in life, you have to work for it. You know, greatness, accomplishing something amazing will not happen by accident. You know, we have many people that wait around for the lottery and they don't realize that they hit the lottery every day when they're fortunate enough to wake up, take air into their lungs, start anew, and do something incredible, and understanding that it may not happen in a day, but what I do today will impact where I am next week, and so on and so forth. And that amazing thing will happen as long as we don't take our eyes off the goal. And there's going to be adversity along the way. But that adversity, it's like specks of dust on the windshield, you know, when you're really focused on where you're headed and where you're ultimately supposed to be. So, you know, they say adversity builds character, and I believe that. But I think we should embrace adversity because I think that's where we develop our strength.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Would you be so kind for the listeners and I to read that again for us, that quote there, because that is so empowering.
Yeah, it says, greatness is a choice. Create who you want to be. And Greg, I have to be honest with you. I remind myself of this regularly, you know, whether I'm at the gym or whether I have a suit and tie on doing a presentation. I'm just reminded that we create these outcomes, but we have to be intentional. We have to be committed. Talent alone won't do it. Do we have the will to push through? What is it that we want? What is it that we're willing to do? And if that goal is big enough, if you have a big enough why, you can figure out how. But just know that it won't always be easy. But some of those greatest lessons come from the things that were the most difficult.
No doubt about that. I'm going to start incorporating that in my morning reflection. That is unbelievable. Now, we always have students from Seton Hall listening and other colleges. Sometimes we even have high school students and their families listening. Is there one most important thing you may want prospective students and their families to know if they're making the decision to attend Seton?
Wow. I think, you know, having a son, as I mentioned, who's in college. He's actually in Florence, Italy right now.
Oh, I'm very jealous.
But this message, so am I. But I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks, so I will be a little less jealous.
Oh, wonderful.
But I say that because I think it's connected to what my response is. Think about who you are and think about all that you can become. Come to a place that you're going to feel loved, that you're going to feel nurtured, that you're going to feel challenged, but that you'll also feel supported to explore the possibilities ahead. And if you feel that Seton Hall provides that environment that will help you do that, then I think that's the place that you should be. And if it's not Seton Hall, I would still urge everyone to find that place or that space that will provide that energy. So we all have those opportunities to become the best versions of ourselves. You know, my son is someplace now that he's never been. Wow. And he experienced a little bit of anxiety, you know, before that journey.
Sure.
And we talked through it and he talked about his fears, but we also talked about the opportunity and the possibilities. And I said to him, it's not about the travel itself. It's about how the experience will change you and what it will reveal about you. You know, it's one thing to be reflective. I also, similar to you, I do a morning reflection, but it often leads to introspection, you know, and that's that deeper dive of who am I at my core? Who aren't I? Who do I aspire to be? What am I willing to do to get there? And typically it's something I have to do more of. It's something I have to do different. I have to thought partner with people from different backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives. I get to benefit from like the richness of diversity of these thoughts and these feelings. I get to be more innovative because now I'm listening more and I'm wrestling with difference and other perspectives. That's what happens at Seton Hall. That's what happens oftentimes in higher ed. That's what happens when we step out of our comfort zones to expand our comfort zone. See, people oftentimes say, well, step out of your comfort zone, but it's an implication that you come back to it. I don't think you come back. I think you expand it and you continue to do so. And so you normalize those behaviors on a regular basis and recognize that every interaction, every moment of every day can reveal something new and something true. But you have to be open to those possibilities. And I think it requires a vulnerability. And I think people are more inclined to be vulnerable when they feel safe and when they feel supported and they feel advocated for. And I'm confident that's what we do at Seton Hall.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Now, this being Black History Month, the month of February just starting, let's shift gears, if you don't mind, and talk about Black History Month. What type of programming is Seton Hall curating for Black History Month? Must be some special things there.
Great questions. Well, we always do, I think, a great job with all of the heritage months. I think Black History Month, given its national recognition here in the UK and in Canada, I think it has just added interest, if you will, because it's, you know, it's been really a part of the fabric of our culture in America for decades. And as all institutions of higher learning, you know, there are going to be speakers, you know, there are going to be a lot of student driven programs where they're bringing in speakers and they're doing things to really create opportunities to have discussions around diversity, equity, inclusion. But I think there are more so opportunities to have cultural exchanges, to have that deep dialogue that is necessary. But more significantly, I think the programs are designed to remind people that Black History Month isn't really just February, it's every month. And that the contributions of Black people and those that are representatives across the African diaspora are many. And I think that if anything, it should spark an interest in us wanting to do a deeper dive all the time, not just about Black history, but about all history in all cultures, in all people and their contributions. I think all too often, you know, we look at the struggles and we look at the adversity, but we don't celebrate the beautiful things that have come out of those struggles and that adversity, the innovation, the technological advancements, the enlightening of people, the changing of minds in ways that people operate to have an impact in society. I think that what we do at Seton Hall is all of those things. But I think one thing that's important to say is over the last couple of years, Seton Hall has done a much better job of communicating across our community. Because what we did is we recognized that there are all these wonderful things happening, but they were happening in pockets.
Oh, wow.
And no one really knew about them, you know, other than maybe that department that had the speaker coming in their students at their school, their majors. But I think it's important that faculty and administration and student government, et cetera, priest community are all able to participate, Absolutely. Are all able to have these exchanges, are all able to have these conversations. I think Black History Month was beautiful about the timing of it. It's in the beginning of the year. You know, it gives everyone an opportunity to engage very intentionally because these things are done for them and they can participate in a variety of ways. But you have 10 other months. You know, to think about what you're doing in your day-to-day life to really give others that platform, how to use your privilege to provide others an opportunity to have their voice heard. So that when we talk about one Seton Hall, that everyone feels validated, you know, their authentic selves. You know, everyone can feel safe, comfortable, empowered to do something amazing. We have opportunities to really impact the world. And I don't administrator recognizing that I'm underrepresented in this space. People that look like me are underrepresented in our student population. You know, that's not something I take lightly. You know, I think it's important that we all advance equity, we all advance inclusion, that we normalize what these experiences should be, that we're not an exception, we're just exceptional. And I like that we celebrate that.
Ah, that is so awesome. And if I perceive correctly, I'm not surprised, Seton Hall is very much on the forefront of promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. Share with us a little bit, please.
That's perfect. You perfectly stated. And, you know, we also, every week, there's a diversity, equity, inclusion newsletter that goes electronically throughout the community.
Wow.
There's a monthly newsletter, and everyone can contribute to that. You know, we update the calendar regularly. So I would encourage anyone that's interested in seeing all that's happening at Seton Hall to, you know, go on our diversity, equity, inclusion webpage. You can look at the monthly anti-racism trainings that we're offering, the allyship trainings that are being developed, the tons of programming that are just happening every day. By coordinating those efforts, you know, improving that collaboration, enhancing that communication, the hope is that the university community can all celebrate in these events and activities and contribute as much or as little as they want, but to really have their fingerprints on the experience of everyone.
Oh, that's so great. Now, as a Black male who holds a very senior position at the university, would you have some advice for Black students and young men of color?
My advice would be don't be afraid to succeed. I think so many of us, when we're in spaces that we're not widely represented and we don't see the representation that gives us maybe that sense of home or that sense of safety, we oftentimes feel like we don't belong. And if we continue to internalize that, we won't have that representation, and then others won't see it, and then they will feel that they don't belong. I would say don't be afraid of success. Don't be afraid of doing something different just because you haven't seen it before. Normalize that. My son called me his first week last year, his first week at school. He is a mechanical engineering major.
Wow.
He's a pretty bright kid. He's far more intelligent than I am. He takes after his mother, my wonderful wife. But he called me after his chemistry lab. And he said, "Dad, I think I made the wrong decision. I don't think I belong here." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? You haven't done anything yet. It's your first day." He said, "I'm the only Black male in this lab.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that this is where I'm supposed to be." And I told him that I appreciated him sharing that with me, and that I would understand if he chose a different path because he wasn't comfortable. But I urged him, or I cautioned him, to think about 10 years, 20 years from now, if he will regret the decision to not see how great he could actually be if he stayed right there.
Yes.
And I gave him an option. I said, you know, you can leave and find something else and be successful and know that someone else next year is going to come in and they won't see you. And they'll feel the same way, that they don't belong. Or you can show the world what magic looks like.
Oh.
And I believe he chose the latter. Needless to say, he ended up getting an A in the course, you know, his dean's list, is now studying abroad, you know, is doing very well. He now has a confidence in his competence in being able to navigate those spaces because he did it one time. And now that's his frame of reference. I would tell these students not to be afraid of success.
Wow. Oh, that is absolutely awesome. If our loyal listeners wish to contact you, Majid, how can they best do so?
You know, the best way to contact me these days, you know, via email, since, you know, we're on Teams or Zoom all the time. And that would be my first name and last name, Majid, Majid.Whitney, Whitney, at shu.edu. And now our emails are connected to our team, so I can be contacted very easily. I'm always accessible. Happy to support different endeavors or guide anyone and help in any way that I can. So I would tell them to reach out anytime they want.
Oh, that's terrific. Listeners, let me give you that again. That's majid.whitney at shu.edu. Listeners, take full advantage. We have someone here who, yes, enlightens us, but greatly inspires us. So don't hesitate to reach out to him to see exactly how he can help. And he's been a tremendous help to us this morning. So thank you again for being with us. And listeners, just as a quick note, certainly after you've done contacting Majid, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Remember, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and now even on TikTok. So don't hesitate to reach out to us, please. Majid Whitney, we can't thank you enough for gracing our studios today. As I just mentioned, yes, you've enlightened us. Much more, you've inspired us. This has been a great way for us on Thank God for Monday to start celebrating Black History Month. We wish you a great month. We wish you a great 2022 and beyond. Enjoy Italia, certainly. It sounds like it's going to be a wonderful trip. And I hope our paths cross the next time I can get down to a beautiful Sitonia, sir.
Thank you so much, Greg, for the opportunity. This has been great. Congratulations on 15 years. I mean, that in itself is amazing. And I just really appreciate you just allowing me the time and the space to share. So thank you.
The honor was all ours today. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Majid does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode of Thank God for Monday, have a great week. Bye-bye, everybody.